Yep, we had 15 sales reps that were knocking on the doors, and I wish we would have done something that would have been a hybrid, and we would have probably gone that direction had we continued growing the business. But I think, you know, every offline business, which is what we were, has the opportunity to have the hybrid online stuff that a lot of the community that you're involved in and I'm involved in now.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Joe, how are you?
I'm good. Feeling old and tired, but pretty good. How about you?
You are old and tired. And I'm catching up quickly.
But I'm not cold. It's 63 in North Carolina today, and you're going to get snow this weekend, right?
Okay, stop it. Stop it. By the time this episode airs, it's going to be beautiful here, and I will no longer be recording episodes. I'll be outside enjoying it.
Yeah, sunny in 36.
Yeah, something like that. All right. When we talk to people that want to sell their business, pretty common scenario, they're looking for a strategic exit. Or maybe they'll say, you know, we go through the whole valuation process and then they come back and they say, you know, I've got a couple companies in mind that might be really good fits to acquire the business, right? And they're thinking about strategics. I'm sure you get that pretty often on your side.
True. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So strategics, how do you actually do them? Are they worth it? Do you actually get more money from them? That is the subject of today's interview. I sat down with Ryan Tansom. Ryan has his own podcast, which we talk about a little bit, but he's got a really cool story. He and his dad were in business together in a traditional offline business. They were selling copiers and had all sorts of contracts there. And they went through the process of merging that company with another one. They first tried to sell the company, found out how difficult it was. Then they spent some time retooling and really planning their exit. And after they retooled and planned their exit, they were able to do a deal in just a few weeks. So his whole thing right now is to help people plan their exit and build value in their business at the same time. But I wanted to talk to him about, how do you plan an exit if you want to do a strategic sale? And does that make sense? Do you actually get more money from it? And what are the chances that it's going to happen? It was a fascinating conversation.
Well, it's one thing that most people don't do, and that's plan their exit. They usually just wake up one day and decide, I'm tired. I want to sell the business. I'm ready to move on. So, you know, I've talked to Ryan a number of times, and I think his life experience, what he went through with his business with his father, trying to sell, finding it was difficult, and then actually putting a plan together and deciding when he executed that plan, he sold the business very quickly. And I think to a strategic buyer, he learned an awful lot, and he's sharing that with people now. So it's nice that he's got the firsthand experience and he's sharing it with people. And I think he does a real good job at it.
Yeah. And so in this, we're going to talk about what do you need to do to get that strategic exit set up. And not surprisingly, it's a lot of the same stuff you have to do if you're going to have a financial exit or a regular market type sale. It just takes a little more upfront work. And we talk about the chances of it actually happening. And I also talk about how it's not always the best thing. The very first business I sold lent itself to a strategic exit. We ended up going to a financial buyer because they actually got more money from it. So we talk a little bit about that as well. Why don't we get on into it? Because there's a lot of good meaty topics in this episode.
Let's do it.
Ryan, hey, how are you?
Good, Mark. How are you doing?
Thanks for joining me. It's been a while since you and I met. I think we were just talking about this, what, a year and a half ago or something like that, at Caribou Coffee here in the Twin Cities.
Yep.
Yeah, you're local to me, which I like.
I know. We're local, yet we're sitting here on video, right? I love it.
Yeah. We should have done the very first podcast, but, yeah, right. But you would have had to be like saddled up right next to me. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, on our podcast, we like to let our guests introduce themselves, partly because we're really lazy and don't like to do the upfront research, but also because guests do a better job of introducing themselves. So could you introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners? You know, what's your story? What's your background? And why are we talking?
Yeah. Appreciate it. I'm glad to be on the show. I'm usually the one doing the interviewing, so this is actually a lot of fun. So Ryan Tansom, my dad and I had a family business, kind of the little bit of the backdrop. Back in 2014, we ended up selling it. He grew it from the ground up, bought a semi-truck full of copiers in the mid-90s, and ended up growing a very substantial business. I think we topped out at about 20 million and 100 employees. And I joined the firm full-time in the financial crisis, and it was pretty much a lot of all hands on deck for the 7 years I was there. It was we realized that the company was not sellable because there was a private equity firm that was buying up platform companies in each marketplace, and we had the opportunity to potentially be one of those, and they passed on us. So we spent pretty much the next 6 years, 7 years going, okay, what do we need to do to build a sellable business that either I buy it or we sell it to someone else? We didn't really know all of our options. So we just rolled up our sleeves and did a bunch of stuff, built out the outsourced IT, remarketed ourselves, did a bunch of stuff. And then in 2014, ended up selling it to a local competitor here, which the sale went very well financially. But we left a lot of money on the table from the lack of tax planning and some other deal structure, that things that we could have done creatively. And then also we found out, you know, a strategic sale like that, there's a lot of redundancies. So I ended up having to fire a lot of my good friends and family and employees. So since then, I've been on a mission to figure out how do you align your growth strategy with your exit strategies so that way you get what you want, regardless whether that's financial or, you know, anything associated with your business that you know, whether it's legacy or culture and stuff like that. So hopefully that's not too much, but it's definitely the backdrop of why I'm doing what I'm doing.
All right. So there's a lot that we can unpack here, and we're going to have to try and pick a branch and go with it, because I think there is a lot that we can unpack here. The business that you and your dad sold, this is more of a traditional offline business, right? Copier sales?
Yep. Well, we had 15 sales reps that were knocking on the doors, and I wish we would have done something that would have been a hybrid, and we would have probably gone that direction had we continued growing the business. But I think, you know, every offline business, which is what we were, has the opportunity to have the hybrid online stuff that a lot of the community that you're involved in and I'm involved in now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the online community is moving towards this more traditional business model, at least in the e-com space. And you've seen it also in larger SaaS companies, because they do develop larger staffs and onboarding and customer service and all that. So similarities definitely are there. So I guess let's talk first about the fact that you left money on the table with your deal. I mean, you spent 6 years trying to hammer the business into shape. And I think there's a discussion there on its own. Like, how do you, as you said, how do you align your growth strategies and your business strategies with an exit strategy? But I'd like to know a little bit more about leaving money on the table. A lot of times when we say people are leaving money on the table, it's because they haven't maximized the sale price of their business. But were there other areas where you guys felt that you left money on the table?
You know, I think, yeah, there's a lot of different variables in this. And, you know, I've got a podcast too that I've interviewed lots of entrepreneurs that have sold, and I've tried to unpack this exact topic as well. And there's a price. So I might want to give you $2 million for your business. That doesn't mean you're getting $2 million bucks because you're paying taxes. So there's the whole deal structure, whether it's asset sales or stock sales or how the deal is structured, from earnouts, from, you know, an SBA loan financing, whatever it is. You know, when someone starts courting you, whatever dollar amount is thrown out, there's a lot after the fact of what actually comes into your bank account. So whether that's the tax planning, the deal structure, you know, escrow, all that kind of stuff. And then there's the maximizing the value of the business. So there's kind of two different key components to it.
Yeah. And I think just by way of example, with an online business, let's say that you're a sub S corp and somebody wants to buy your business for $5 million. Great. And they're getting an SBA loan and everything looks good. But then you get down to it, and at the end of your purchase agreement, there's this asset allocation agreement as to how is this being allocated tax-wise. And the buyer says, well, we want to pay, out of the $5 million, we want $1 million to be your salary for the next 2 years for consulting. And that's part of the purchase price. Well, now that comes in at ordinary income tax, screws up your whole tax, personal tax situation, because you bumped. Yeah, how much are you netting from that then at that point? And, you know, for buyers trying to relegate towards income makes sense, because they can write it off right away. If they're going towards assets, it's a longer period of times that they can write that off. So there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot more complexities there in terms of the deal structure. So let's talk about maximizing the value, the dollar amount. Do you feel like you guys left some money on the table with that?
No, actually, I think we did as much as we could have, because our business naturally, I got to peer into what is the, honestly, the best kind of business, because we had contracts that were locked in with recurring revenue, backed by bank financing, bundled in with maintenance. So like, if you wanted to buy, you know, managed IT services with, you know, bundled in with servers, firewalls, maintenance, copiers. I mean, you'd be paying, you'd be bundled in financed, and then it'd be 60 months typically, and it'd be in, it's as good as a mortgage. So when you're looking at, you know, what we did and what our industry, it wasn't something that we were like, you know, geniuses or anything like that. The whole industry had been gone that way. And it's, I think it's because the whole industry was built off of greedy salespeople. the reality is it was good as mortgages because you can't cancel. So it didn't really matter when you think about a strategic sale like that, the relationships with the salespeople, the admin, all the infrastructure was redundant because we could literally just take a bunch of paperwork and give it to someone else. And so you're mitigating less on the sale on like the EBITDA multiples because the cash flow is not the situation. It is you're handing over contracts. So I don't think there's anything we could have particularly done on that aspect to maximize the sale of the business, but the industry itself taught me what we got lucky is pretty much what it came down to versus you look at all these other businesses where they might be a $50 million consulting company and there's nothing to sell besides a bunch of people. So I realized after the fact, you know, that we got lucky and then there's a lot of other ways to there's a lot of other ways to maximize the value of the business from the strategic operational side like that. And then it comes down to, you know, we sold a couple branches prior to selling the corporate headquarters. So the first time we sold our branch, we got about half the price because we didn't have the preliminary due diligence done. They didn't trust us. We couldn't get the right documents and all these different things. So there was technical stuff on that aspect that by the time we ended up selling, we knew what questions were coming at us and why.
How did that impact the price that second time around?
We ended up, we closed in 2 weeks. On a very substantial sale. So average closing is, you know, you're talking months and months and months. It was because we came there with a package and said, this is exactly what we have. Here's our profitability. Here's where every single dime goes in and out of the business. Here's why. Here's our employee contracts, customer contracts, vendor contracts. I mean, everything was just ready versus the first time. I mean, it was like we were bumbling idiots. Didn't have any clue what they were asking and why.
Yeah, we've created a very simple paradigm at Quiet Light Brokerage that we call the four pillars of value. And that is look at the risk of your business, the growth opportunities, how transferable it is. And then the last one would be in documentation. And I think sometimes people take that documentation a bit light as to, well, it may not really make that much of a difference in the value of the business. It's just going to make it easier. It actually makes a difference in the value of the business too.
100%. Yep. I got people that I know that I've interviewed and talked to where the value actually went up by 30% because with a click of a button, especially with like Dropbox these days and software, where like you can, hey, here's everything. A, you can get more buyers to the table quickly if you can do that instead of having to, you know, trudge through all these documents. But, you know, you end up as the seller, end up guiding the process more than the buyers. Because in the marketplace, 90%+ of the time, the buyers are coming in there and they're going to find every reason to discount that company so that they can make the return.
Right. And on top of that, it's risk, right? So a buyer takes a look at a business with poor documentation and they don't know what they don't know. And so they see that as being risky and they will discount and account for that risk as well in the purchase price. And if you don't have your stuff together, you can't defend against it. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about strategic sales because you guys did a strategic sale and this is something that I find there's a lot of questions on. First, let's talk about what's the difference between a strategic and a marketplace sale in your world.
So, and it's my world, it's every world, right? So a strategic sale, well, let's start with the financial sale. The financial sale, whether it's an e-commerce business or if it's a traditional business or whatever it is, someone's looking for cash flow. What's transferable cash flow? So if I wanted to buy Quiet Light, if you guys are dropping $500,000 to the bottom line or whatever it is, I want to, well, how transferable is that? So that's where the multiple EBITDA comes from. So, you know, if I can buy that cash flow without having any risk that it's going to decline, then you apply a multiple, which is how many years, what's my rate of return that I want? 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is. And the more transferable that is, the higher the multiple goes up. So, I mean, someone that's looking for, cash flow is a lifestyle buyer, a private equity buyer, you know, I would say that there's also strategic financial buyers, which is someone that understands M&A extremely well and knows how to do this. You know, that's kind of like a hybrid, but so they're looking for cash flow and they're applying a rate of return based on the risk of the business and the asset. Then you're in the strategic sale, which I think is one of the funnest ones because every business owner, every entrepreneur that I sit down in front of or I talk to, you know your business and your industry better than anybody that's out there, right? So you know who you would partner with, where the collaborations would be, all these different things. So it's all of it, like I don't want to say the multiples EBITDA go out the window, but it's more of how fast in terms of if thinking of rate of return from, you know, 3 years to 5 years or whatever the buy might be and the rate of return is, how fast can they pay for that? So regardless of the EBITDA, now you're saying, okay, well, are there complementary products and services? Is there, you know, cross-pollination between customer lists? You know, is there horizontal ways or vertical ways you guys can expand? And if you can think about everything in the terms of the buyer, the strategic buyer, and what they would do with your business, you can literally model it out for them how fast they can pay for your company.
Yeah. All right. So this is great. I want to talk about this because we get this question, probably one out of every four or five people that contact us to sell. One of the very first things that they say is, well, I have a few companies in mind that might be a good fit for us. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking in terms of those like strategic sale, and they think it's going to be much more valuable to them. And there is some truth to this. The web hosting industry is a classic example, right? Web hosting, the very first company I sold working with QuietLight Brokerage, or when I first started QuietLight Brokerage, was a web hosting company. And a web hosting company has tons of rollups because you have just a bunch of user accounts that are on servers. And it's very easy to migrate those user accounts over to another server, keep the packages the same. It's really just disk space and transfer rates, at least at the time, that's what it was, and a monthly contract. So it was really, really easy without transferring over all the staff. So like you said, all of the expense profile of those companies, you didn't really care about that because if I'm the acquiring company, I already have those expense profiles. I know what it cost me to host 400 or 500 clients. So it really became a client count. Now, when you're talking about a strategic sale, like you said, there's not only the redundancies, which you dealt with firsthand, it sounds like, in your sale, redundancies where you had multiple salespeople doing the same thing, so you have to let some people go. But there's also the synergies that might crop up with one company that's in a neighboring industry, right?
Right. All right. And there's also, like, for us, it was we didn't sell telecom. It was the one thing in outsourced IT and office technology that we didn't do. So you say, okay, we got 2,000-3,000 accounts. How many people can you sell telecom to? A lot, probably. So that's not guaranteed profit that they're going to make, but it makes the deal look better. You know, then you can make some basic assumptions or something like that. And then, you know, cash with order discount on suppliers. We weren't taking advantage of that. Can they? You know, so you start to think about any way you should, like, going to that buyer and saying, here's all of the things that you can do, literally packaging it up for them. And, you know, I think there's some people that you and I know in Rhodium and YAC that, so he's in their family started in the retail wedding industry. They got online. Well, weddings usually don't have repeat customers. You know, there are a couple every now and then, but, you know,
that's hopefully not.
You're not usually dealing with subscription services. So, you know, what are different ways that they can expand their products and services? Because they have a crazy amount of volume that come through their doors every single year because they've got a very good foothold in Minnesota here. But so is there robes? Is there jewelry? Is there, you know, other things that they can sell them? And they know their volume of their customers. So, you know, yeah, there's the sale of the purchase price and the profit, but they're more looking at it. Do I build it or do I buy it? So they know how long it's going to take, the opportunity cost of how long it's going to take to build it, screwing things up, all that kind of stuff.
Right, right. All right. So let's talk about how you would, let's say we have a listener out there, they own a business and they're thinking, you know, I'd really like a strategic sale just because my business is unique enough. I think there'd be enough benefit for maybe three or four companies that are sort of neighboring my industry. How would they want to go about preparing their business and thinking about that exit, a potential strategic sale?
That's a good question. And I think, you know, this whole conundrum of exit planning and growth planning, I believe that if entrepreneurs are running the business the way that they should and working on the business, not in the business, and treating their business like an actual investment, then it is like, where are all the different options that I can sell to whenever and how fast can I divest? So it's being ready no matter what. If you're loving and addicted to the growth and you're having a blast, great. But always be ready for industries that change. Google changes their algorithm. Facebook gets kind of a little bit of a heat like they are right now. Always preparing yourself so that, you know, the first and foremost is the due diligence, your docs, and knowing and really cleaning up your financials. Because if you can't answer any kind of questions that even your friend would ask, the buyer is going to just completely slam you down. So getting your house in order and the financials and the due diligence is one thing. But then thinking about, okay, so if these are going to be the five that I, you know, these five companies are companies that I could eventually sell to, who are they and what and why? And how will your decisions in the business affect where you're going? So for example, if one of the companies is running on, you know, is an Amazon merchant or something, or if someone's running on Shopify, don't go build out a Magento, you know, don't spend $300,000 on Magento. if someone that you're going to sell to is doing Shopify. I mean, that's the same thing that we did. We spent $300,000 on an ERP system because 85% of the people in our industry had it. So it, that's why we could close in 2 weeks. So knowing, you know, how you're spending the money and why in relationship to where you're going to sell, and knowing again, so if you think about, you know, in a, in, if there's a, if your service has complementary services to someone else, don't go spend a bunch of money building out something that they have, because you're not going to get the return. So you're going to spend, you know, there's immediate cash flow, but then you're not going to get the actual, because they don't see any synergies. So I think it's aligning where you want to go and why, and then also the strategic decisions that you're doing in between there.
Yeah. All right. So I want to actually bring this to a really basic level here, because I think it's an important point to make, especially when we're talking about strategic sales. I think people get with a financial market sale where you're just taking a look at your EBITDA, you're taking a look at the profitability of the company, and you have Joe Blow buyer come in who really isn't related to the industry. We all know that he wants to get a return on that investment after 3 or 4 years, you know, see that investment come back. And so it's pretty easy to apply a multiple. Sometimes when we're talking about strategic sales, people kind of go crazy and they start thinking, well, look at all the upside potential that is going to come about from this. And so they start blowing their valuation expectations through the roof, because sometimes strategics do get really high relative valuations, at least relative to the financials. That said, I'm going to make a very basic statement here, and I'm sure you would agree. Strategics still need to see an ROI, right? They still need to see that return on investment. Yeah. So what you're saying is, when you're building out your company, when you're really planning that exit and working on the company, think about the ROI that the potential buyer is going to have, mm-hmm. and don't build something that is going to be super expensive for them to migrate over, right?
Right. Right. Okay. And it's like, so how we went about it is, I want to know this business. I want to know why they should buy this business more than anybody else. So like, I want to know everything about their business. I want to know exactly what their marketing strategy is, what their profitability strategy is. I want to know their strategy just as well as they do, whether you can or not, because then you can show exactly how you fill their strategic plan based on what they're buying.
Right. All right. So let's talk about modeling a little bit. When you're talking about a strategic sale, in your case, with your dad and your business, there were redundancies in staff. And so when you're looking at presenting the financial picture to a potential acquiring company, how did you go about that? How did you pitch as far as the ROI?
So I had like literally our entire, I mean, we had cash flow statement, and we learned a lot the first time, right? So I knew every single penny that went into that business and why. So we did some serious cash flow modeling. So we had our whole P&L, and then we had the forecast of what was going on. So sales and the cost of goods, our profitability. And I hacked a bunch of stuff through it. And I said, okay. And I GL code by GL code, Mark. Like,
wow.
I know, because, you know, there's in the financial buy, there's the add backs, right? So, you know, $100,000 might be $300,000 on the value, or, you know, plus, or, you know, whether it's being added to the value or not. So, you know, usually in the financial buys, you want to take that off to increase your EBITDA. So that way it is applied to the multiple. But in this, it's kind of the same thing where you're saying, okay, you don't need these people. You don't need these servers. You don't need these things because you already have them. You know, so that is all dropping to the bottom line, which will then help them, you know, calculate the ROIs. So we just looked down and we said, okay, here's how much of the expenses you can take out of this with these assumptions. And then we went back and forth. They said, well, we actually need these people. We need these things. And then you're just negotiating back and forth, but it's not more in the add backs. It's more of understanding what, like, the redundancies and the strategic, you know, value behind the two. So it's a similar exercise, but, you know, and the outcome is actually kind of the same, but it's more specifically to operations.
One of the key pieces I think needs to be understood is you need to understand the industry and the business itself. We worked with a financial, a Forex lead site. This was several years ago, and they were getting lots of leads that they were selling, and they wanted to arrange a strategic sale to a Forex broker because they knew that they were generating these leads. And so the equation really became, okay, we know how much we're getting paid on an affiliate basis for these leads, but as a Forex broker, here's where the dollar amount for valid leads are. And now we can start modeling out, what does this look like? How much revenue is this site really making, mm-hmm. from a Forex broker standpoint? And then you have that value proposition there.
Yeah, it's literally about knowing both of the businesses and the industry as well as you possibly can, So you can just design exactly how it looks. And then you back into the numbers. You know, I'm just kind of just making some other things up. But like, you know, when you and I have talked, and I think that was when you were on my show, we were talking about the hybrid of, you know, the online versus offline. And so if someone has literally the best data ever on their drip marketing, their automation, in their online marketing, and knows exactly, they've got the entire cost of acquisition of one lead, and whether it's Facebook ads or Google ads, all the, with the email marketing, they say, here's how much all this stuff costs. They can go in and if you can layer that and you know, sync that up with an offline business, it's like there's some huge power there because you know that they're not doing that potentially. So you can, there's just so many different ways to design that, I guess. That's kind of the fun part.
Yeah. And the nice thing with strategics is that, that there's really, you have the ability to blow a traditional valuation out of the water, right? That's one of the big advantages. Transitions can also be a little bit easier because they already know the industry. And so you don't have the same, here's how you do this little process that you should probably know anyways. It's a little easier to transition. When I talk to people about doing strategic, so I often tell them that I don't think it's a good idea for them. And the reason I say that is mainly because they're difficult to do if you haven't been preparing. How long do you think it takes to really prepare a business for a strategic?
So I think, you know, maybe I'll go back a couple of steps, which is like, what's the order of operations I think you should do to do this correctly, right? So kind of the assumption is to repeat is get your foundation set up, build your financials, build a healthy business from recurring revenue, you know, the clarity of all these different things, making sure you don't have a bunch of concentration in one client, all the typical ways of de-risking a business. And if you're striving to make a healthy business like that, then you have lots of options. And so at the bare minimum, you should be able to sell to a financial buyer. So then call it the 3 to 5 times multiple of EBITDA. So you know that, you know, financially going, okay, if it's 200 grand, I know that I'm going to be getting 600 to a million. Whatever it might be, right? So I know that's how, or that's my target. But with a strategic sale, you could completely blow it out of the water, but that's kind of like hunting. It's hunting for unicorns or really specific synergies. So you mentioned 5 people, that's fantastic, but what if they don't want it? What if they're struggling? What if they don't have the money, don't have the ability to get banked? All those different things, those are things that you don't know. And yes, you should work towards them. So I think, you know, to answer your question, I don't know, but what really helps with that is like, we knew our buyer, like half of our employees, it's, you know, hop back and forth. You know, we were in the same industry trade association. So the woman I interviewed yesterday at my show, she said, she would have spent 2 to 3 years building and fostering those relationships. So those people could have been at the table. She didn't do that. So this is more relationship building, going to Rhodium Weekend, going to the YAC events, going to Shop Talk, all these different things where people build relationships. And then those things, what ends up happening is it happens at the bar over a napkin and then you back into stuff.
Right. Absolutely. So that's actually the number one tip I give people that want to do strategics is if you want to do strategic 2 or 3 years down the road, yeah, right. if you want to do a strategic 2 or 3 years down the road, contact the companies now and don't say, hey, I want to sell to you. Just contact them, do that real networking stuff, you know, get out there. And once they become aware of your company and you start to learn each other's companies, then you can sort of seed that conversation for down the road.
And then you get on their radar, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not on their radar otherwise. So like, you know, there was actually a really interesting story that I heard, Mark, from one of the guys I interviewed on my podcast, where he was at a trade association. He started talking to one of his biggest competitors and he goes, why don't you buy me? And that's how he started. And they started, you know, BSing and then they went around. And then the guy said, you know what? Why don't you just, let's have a quarterly to every 6 month call to see how you're doing. And these people literally told him exactly what to do. So they could buy him.
That's great.
That's super unique, right? I mean, his name was Norm Brodsky. He wrote Street Smarts and he was a part of the Small Giants book. So he was on the cover of Inc. and he had a lot of exposure. But like, I think the concept is very unique because if you wanted to buy my business, why don't you just keep telling me what to do? And then if everything works, I mean, that's, like I said, it's kind of shooting for the stars. But I mean, hey, you got really nothing to lose at that point, especially if you don't need to sell.
Yeah. All right. So you said a couple of things a little while ago, I think is a good foundation to have. And this is the general advice and feel free to disagree with it. If you disagree with any of the advice I typically give people, I'd love your perspective on this. With strategics. Yeah. You can get the out of the water valuation sometimes, but it all starts with first making your business a financially viable business and something that you can sell on the financial market.
Right.
You are dealing with fewer buyers. This is probably the biggest obstacle to a strategic sale. You know, you might have a half a dozen companies that could potentially acquire a business. And the mistake people make is they one day say, I want to sell my business. And then they call up ABC company, and ABC company saying, yeah, we don't have $1 million, or you are not in our annual budget this year. You know, acquisitions were not in our plans for this year.
Right. Well, and like to pause for there for a second, because it's, they may have the money, but like everybody's busy. Right. So what if they're developing their own software, doing something else? They might just not have the physical time to integrate the two companies.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. So you need to have that relationship in place, and it has to make sense. It has to be a natural evolution, kind of like a marriage. Right. I mean,
Totally. I mean, you're partnering up with someone.
Yeah. And the last thing I would say is take a look to see if it actually does make sense. That first company that I sold in the web hosting space, I could have sold that very easily in a strategic sale because there are so many strategics happening. We did a financial sale because we were going to get more money. So where you can often blow the top off of the valuation with the strategic, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes the financial actually does work a little bit better. Kind of a weird, odd case.
And then here's one. Sorry, were you?
No, go ahead, please. Please.
I think the one thing too that people really need to think about, because you might blow the valuation off the charts, but I'll tell you what, Mark, the reason I do what I do now is because we got the financial target that we wanted to hit. I literally had to fire 60 of my friends and family. So if your culture and your employees and like the clients and what's more important, like you have to understand what's important to you, because in a strategic sale, redundancies are huge. So how will you stomach that afterwards? Like going and calling all of our employees in, we had 85 or something like that at the time. And they only kept a third. I mean, like that's literally the stomach ache. Are you going to be proud and happy about what you build? Is it just a financial target and that's fine? And you know, you have people across, you know, dispersed across the US, and there's a lot of VAs, and you're not overly loyal to them. Or if there's people that you care about, like knowing what they play, what role they play in that strategic sale, I think is extremely important, so you can calibrate against your other options.
That's a really, really good point. So what do you do now? What are you doing these days after the sale, of course?
So other than being a podcast, podcaster like yourself. So we have a company called GEXP Collaborative. So it's Growth and Exit Planning Collaborative is what it's what it stands for. And it took a lot of time in over the last 4 years. This exit planning, I think there's some negative connotations to it because you might not want to sell right now, but it's literally about having a good business. So we combine the two, which is growth and exit planning, because it's like we've been talking about, what are your plans, and then how do you back into all your strategic plans based on where you're trying to go with your options? And I found some amazing people in the industry that have different disciplines, because you've got legal, finance, insurance, the deal structures, you have the business brokers, you got all these people, and they all play a role. And how do you back into that plan? So if you kind of think about it almost like a building, if you start with a building, you're going to start with a budget and a blueprint, because you can't build a building without either of those. So the budget is your financial targets, where you want to go and why. So is there a debt net dollar amount that you need, or a cash flow dollar amount that you need? And then what's the blueprint? So what are the five different strategic buyers? And then you got the six, you know, financial purchase, timing, roles, responsibilities, and you back into it so you can then hire the team and everything. So the growth and exit planning that we do with a collaborative team is literally building the budget and the blueprint, and then actually coordinating the team like a general contractor. Because no one person can do all this stuff. I've been doing it nonstop, day in, day out for 4 years, and I still couldn't single-handedly help someone.
Yeah, there's a lot involved with that. Now, if somebody is listening to this, one of the misconceptions we run into all the time with clients that come to us, they come to us and say, I want to sell. I'm not really ready because I didn't plan ahead. Maybe I should have talked to somebody 2 or 3 years ago. And so we try and get people to talk to us, the brokers, a few years in advance. For you though, you're focusing again on that growth as well. So even if somebody isn't ever really planning to sell, it still makes sense to talk about that growth.
I mean, because the reality is you're going to divest of your business at some point. I mean, there's people like I work with, and it's more in the baby boomers. Well, they're going to die in their business, but then what you're doing is you're working on the shares and the estate planning and dispersing the shares to employees and to kids and to a trust. So he's still going to sell his company. So that's, and you know what, if he loves it, great. But then there's the build a sustainable business that has value and has cash flow, and you've de-risked it so you can literally do whatever you want whenever you want. So yeah, you're right. It's coming ahead of time, but then also knowing the people like you and building those relationships. So you, you can't do this at the last second. You're going to leave money on the table. You're not going to be as happy with the terms and conditions. And so many times, Mark, and I don't know if you see this, but a lot of people that are out there, the people that are on aggressive growth paths, they're out acquiring companies. So the out of blue offers happen all the time. So whether it's PE firms or funds or other strategic buyers, and you get that, how do you know what to weigh that against if you don't have a plan? So you don't even know, like, how much am I going to get? What terms? I mean, you're thinking on the fly, and that usually doesn't go as well as it should.
Right. I mean, the number of times I've heard from clients who get into this process and say, man, I really wish I'd contacted you a year ago. I mean, it happens all the time. No one ever thinks about selling their business until they actually want to sell their business. And I think what's really cool about what you're doing is you're focusing again on not just the exit, you're focusing on the growth, because a good growth strategy is a good exit strategy. They often go hand in hand.
Get back into it. You know, yeah. And just a little plug for you guys too, because we do not do what you do. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they really think because they understand their business so well that they can sell their business by themselves. And oh my gosh, it's the first time you're going to do it. And why, like every one of those professionals should pay for themselves. It should be your return on investment with the spend, because, you know, it's an emotional roller coaster, first of all. And it's like a 24/7 fire drill when you're in the process, which is what your team does, right? So I think all the people, if you have the right advisors, and that's another reason we left a lot of money on the table, is because we didn't have the right advisors. I mean, it wasn't people that do it all day long. They do transactions. They understand the market, your industry. And so having the right team is crazy important.
Yeah. All right. Let me give you a plug as well. If anyone listening to this enjoys the Quiet Light podcast, and hopefully you do if you've listened this long, Ryan's podcast talks a lot about the same stuff. You talk a lot about selling. You talk to a lot of entrepreneurs who have sold their businesses before, and you go over a lot of the same material, but with a little bit of a different spin to it. Really, really high quality content. And another one, what's the name of the podcast? Where can they find it?
Life After Business.
Life After Business. Awesome. So we will link to it in the show notes on our page, on our podcast page. We'll also link over to Ryan's website. And Ryan, anything else that you want us to link over to, you want to draw attention to, please feel free.
I think any closing thoughts? Yeah, we got a resources tab, just like you. You're my model, right? So like I said, a year and a half ago, you put me in the right direction with the presence I wanted online. So we got white papers and resources and podcasts and all that kind of stuff. So
Awesome. So definitely check out his site and feel free to reach out to him if you just want to talk. He's a good guy to talk to. You and I can talk all day about this stuff, and someday we probably will. Awesome. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I had a blast, Mark. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.